We have to talk about the economic fallout of this war escalation that Trump and Secretary of War Pete Hegseth are now pushing. So it looks like a land invasion by thousands of U.S. troops is imminent. If that happens, then it puts us on a completely different course for the wrecking, or maybe we should call it the reckoning, spelled with a W-R, the reckoning of the global economy. Because at this point, then it means we're going all in for a very long conflict that will absolutely see the Strait of Hormuz closed to Western allies for the remainder of this year, almost certainly, and possibly well into 2027, and actually possibly for several years to come. So we have to start talking about Mad Max type of conditions. That's not an exaggeration. We're already seeing the beginning of this in certain parts of Australia, even, where there are now fuel thefts that are taking place. So it doesn't mean that everything's breaking down, but it means that there are rogue gangs now that are stealing fuel because of the scarcity. And, you know, that's one of the storylines of Mad Max, along with, of course, nuclear fallout and, you know, radiation, you know, buying water. Hey, what's a little fallout, eh? You know, that kind of thing. So things are going to trend toward Mad Max in many countries. Not necessarily in the United States. I wouldn't expect the U.S. to, you know, collapse overnight into chaos. I would expect some of the hardest hit areas to be, well, Southeast Asia, like Bangladesh right now, and then India is going to get hard. We're going to see a lot of difficulty in the Philippines, in Thailand, and then eventually in Taiwan and Japan. Western Europe will be hit extremely hard, although it's unlikely that the European leaders will do anything about it because, well, you know, they're European leaders. They don't do anything. They don't do anything useful. All they do is throw their own countrymen and women under the bus. So Europe is going to be in dire straits. Africa, many parts of Central and South America. Mexico will even be hurt by this as well. The United States and Russia and China will probably be the three countries that do the best in terms of just fuel. But all three of those countries, well, especially China and the U.S., will be hit with food scarcity that gets bad. Probably not Russia, actually. Russia is capable of growing its own food, and it has a lot of course, energy there. So I don't really see famine in Russia, but I do see food scarcity in the United States and China later this year. But long before that happens, we're going to see a collapse of the U.S. stock market and the so-called AI bubble. So let's talk about the AI bubble for just a minute here, because as you've heard me say many times, there's no such thing as an AI tech bubble. The technology is not in a bubble. The tech keeps getting better just almost every week. It's unbelievable. I mean, I was downloading and testing some GitHub repos today that are just mind-blowing, actually, for image creation with very good text compliance, by the way, you know, for book covers and things like that. And I was shocked at how good it is. Yeah, anyway, that's another podcast. But the technology is not in a bubble, but the tech company valuations is almost certainly now in a bubble. And that bubble, that is the overvaluation, overinvestment bubble, is going to burst. And that seems clear now because a lot of the data center projects and some of the projects that Trump announced to a lot of fanfare, bragging about how, you know, these Gulf state nations are going to invest either hundreds of billions or trillions of dollars in U.S. projects, you know, AI projects, data center projects, etc. Yeah, that's all done. I mean, all those countries are just going to declare force majeure. Those projects will never happen. So all the stuff that Trump announced and all the Trumpsters were, you know, parroting that, oh, Trump is so great, he's going to bring back, you know, industry to America, he's going to bring back jobs, we're going to build data centers, we're going to be the world leader in AI. None of that's going to happen. Because the Gulf states are fighting for survival right now. They don't have the spare hundreds of billions of dollars to send over to the United States like they did before this war started. So Trump destroyed their financial viability, and he destroyed the relationship between the United States and nations like Qatar and the UAE and so on. That is going to end up crashing the stock market in the United States because it's so heavily weighted towards the tech stocks. You know, the tech stocks dominate the markets, right? And when this correction comes, which could begin as early as Monday if the ground invasion happens over the weekend, or I don't know if Monday is a open market day, but whatever the next open market day is, will probably plunge dramatically after this land invasion commences. And it's not just a stock market bubble. It's also a bond bubble that's going to burst. And what I mean by that is that treasury yields are going to have to rise substantially above 5%, which is going to bankrupt the United States of America even more quickly. And by the way, there was just a treasury auction and there were no buyers. It just happened. Turned out that, you know, the central banks, I mean, the Federal Reserve had to print the money to buy the treasuries to, you know, to pay the debt. Nobody wants to buy U.S. debt. Nobody. Not Japan, not China, not Europe. Everybody's broke, for one thing. And the Gulf state nations, they don't have any more money. They were buyers for a long time. Saudi Arabia, you know, they would get paid in dollars to sell their oil, and they would take those dollars and recycle them back into treasuries so that the Saudis would hold the treasuries and the U.S. would get to print more money with relatively few consequences because they're exporting inflation to the Saudis. Well, those days are done. That's over. Saudis are struggling to maintain economic viability. And the other Gulf state nations that are much smaller than Saudi Arabia, they're struggling to even survive. Qatar called up Trump and said, "We want our $400 million plane back," by the way. At least that's what was reported. I don't know. It sounds hilarious, but you know, they gave Trump a $400 million jumbo jet. Remember that? All decked out like a palace. Now they want it back, you know, or at least reportedly so. Who knows? But the U.S. stock market is about to be toast. The AI market is about to be toast. So, of course, it makes sense to protect yourself from all of this. We're already seeing limits on withdrawals. Lots of limits. Some of these investment funds that have the word black in them, you know, some of these investment funds are limiting withdrawals dramatically. So, yeah, you can put your money in. You can't get your money out. Huh. That's bad news, right? That's going to accelerate until we get to bank bail-ins, where they just take your money. They're just going to seize your money and call it theirs and then give you an IOU or something that never works. So there's that. Yeah. This, you could call this the opening round of the Great Reset. Maybe this is one of the goals of Trump taking us to war, is to cause a financial crisis of such dimension that it collapses the currency and forces people into the CBDCs, where there will be government surveillance and control. Maybe that's one of the goals. Hard to say. But the situation is dire. No question about that. See, I think Trump vastly underestimated the fragile nature of the global monetary system. Most people do. They don't understand that we're living in a giant Ponzi scheme. You know, the petrodollar Ponzi scheme, money printing, treasuries, the whole thing. It's been a con since it was set up from 1913, the creature from Jekyll Island. It's been a con the entire time. And this con is breaking. It's breaking. And when it breaks, it impoverishes the masses, because the dollar collapses, the U.S. government goes broke, it can't meet its obligations, it can't pay the pensions, it can't pay for Medicare and Social Security, you know, in that scenario, if it goes completely bankrupt. And frankly, we are headed for that outcome. We just don't know when, obviously. We don't know the exact timing, but there could be accelerants toward this, such as Israel using nuclear weapons. Or Iran using nuclear weapons. You know, surprise, you land 10,000 troops and then they all get turned into dust or something, you know. That's a possibility. In fact, I've sadly, you know, predicted that might happen. I don't want to see that happen, but I think that's a possible tactic that Iran could use. So any kind of a black swan wild card like that could just literally overnight collapse the dollar as we know it, or collapse the treasury market as we know it, or collapse the Western banking system as we know it. And then, you know, our government could blame it on anything, cyber attacks, EMP, the grid's down, that's North Korea's fault, or Russia attacked us, or whatever, or domestic terrorism, who knows. They could blame it on anything, but the net effect is, if you're holding dollars and stocks and bonds, you are screwed and screwed and screwed. All that stuff could be effectively worth zero instantly because you can't get it out. You know, what is an asset worth if you can't retrieve it? Zero. It doesn't matter what it says on your digital screen when you log in. It doesn't matter what your bank statement says. They'll just declare force majeure. Just like I got the force majeure letter from Airgas the other day. I showed you that for my lab. And in fact, I've got that letter right here. It's force majeure. It says we can't deliver the helium that we promised to deliver, that we have a contract with you to deliver helium. We can't do it because of, you know, circumstances beyond our control. Okay, well, that's a legal invocation. It exempts them from their contractual obligation to deliver helium. Banks can do the same thing. They just say, force majeure, we no longer have to give you your money, period. Boom. And it's not even your money. It's their money. You're a creditor to the bank. You understand? So literally, the only way to protect yourself from this is to have hard physical assets outside of that system, or perhaps, if you're into crypto, maybe you have some private crypto in addition. But gold and silver are clearly the best way to insulate yourself from this and to have self-custody. That's the key. You know, you can buy land, obviously, or just own the land that you're on and own your house and own your vehicle, get out of debt, etc. That's all important. And having gold and silver physically in your custody is the way through this, because then you don't have counterparty risk. Then the bank can't just announce that, you know, we're seizing all your gold, because they don't physically have it. You know, you have it, or you have it vaulted somewhere that you trust, or you have it, you know, buried in the ground somewhere that you trust, you know, or you have it stashed with a friend or whatever. Gold and silver is your way through this. And when the dollar collapses, there will be a period of time, I believe, when people will spend silver. They will spend goldbacks. And goldbacks are, you know, a cash form of gold. And if you want to know how to get goldbacks, you can just go to my website, rangerdeals.com. And right there, you'll see a link. It's an affiliate link to the goldback company, because we recommend them. And goldbacks are very handy. People will use silver or junk silver for, you know, physical barter or payment or means of exchange. Gold will preserve assets to transition into the next monetary system, whatever that happens to be. Because you don't want to store, let's suppose if you have $1 million that you want to keep safe, you don't want to buy $1 million of silver and keep that around, because that's big, bulky, heavy silver. You'd rather have $1 million in gold, because these days, what is gold? Like almost 5,000 again per coin. You know, what is that? I mean, with just 1,000 coins, that's like $5 million. Just 1,000 coins, which you could, you know, just put in the back seat of the car if you wanted to, right? But you can't do that with $5 million of silver. So silver is for spending, and goldbacks are for spending, and gold coins themselves are for preserving assets through the transition. Now, our gold and silver sponsor is, of course, Battalion Metals, co-founded by Tucker Carlson. And you can find them at metalswithmike.com. Metalswithmike.com. And, you know, honest, trustworthy, you know, pro-liberty, pro-Ron Paul people, you can absolutely trust them. You can work with them if you want to get physical gold and silver. And right now, prices continue to be strongly suppressed because of the war. You know, silver has dropped down because of the drop in demand from industry. And I actually think silver will be suppressed to some degree for as long as natural gas supplies stay offline. But once the Strait of Hormuz is eventually opened back up under whoever's control and the energy starts flowing again, silver is going to skyrocket, I believe. That's my assessment. Don't take it as financial advice, obviously. I'm not your financial advisor. Do your own research. But silver has a very strong industrial demand component to it. And gold will go up just because of the war, because of a rush to safety as Western currencies continue to erode and ultimately collapse. And at the end of the day, when the system craters, when the stocks crater, the bonds, the banks, you don't want to be left holding dollar deposits with any of those institutions that have an IOU, that promise you that you can have your money back, because they'll just declare force majeure and you can't have it. It's much better have your gold and silver in your hands or vaulted with a trusted independent vault that's not part of the banking system. That's what's critical. You know, like Battalion Metals, they have their own private vaulting system that's not regulated by the federal government or the banking system. It's not monitored by the banks. It's kind of, you know, decentralized, off the radar, but also highly secure and independently insured by Lloyd's of London, etc. So that's a viable option if you don't want to hold on to it yourself. But again, you can check them out at metalswithmike.com if you want to get some more physical gold and silver. Or if you're squared away on all your gold and silver, then see what else you can store up that will have value through all of this. And, you know, it's going to be food. It's going to be emergency medicine. It might be ammo. Might be diesel fuel. The last time I bought diesel, I paid $2.50 a gallon. Now, it's in some places, it's $7 a gallon. So, wow, I'm burning diesel that I bought for a fraction of the price on purpose. You know, I told you about it, right? I said, get a 500-gallon diesel tank and fill it up. I told you that when diesel was $2.50. That is the agricultural diesel, you know, the non-federal road tax diesel. It's cheaper. But it's only used for agricultural equipment or construction equipment or whatever, but not, you know, not for driving down the highway. That's the regular taxed diesel, which is more expensive. But anyway, for my ranch vehicles and so on, I paid $2.50 a gallon. And feeling pretty good about that, actually, you know? So stay tuned, get prepared. Don't forget about your backup communications from the satellite phone store, SAT123.com. And then follow my news at brightvideos.com and follow my articles at naturalnews.com. Thank you for listening. Get prepared. It's going to be rough for a long time to come. Take care. Well, I hate to be the one to bring you this news, but it keeps getting worse every single day. And right now it looks like the Trump administration and especially the Pentagon is absolutely melting down. The top U.S. Army official has been fired. And other Army officials, not just the very top one, but others, Army Secretary Dan Driscoll, U.S. Army Chief of Staff Randy George, Army General David Hodney, William Green Jr., another general, Chief of Staff Randy George, have all been fired. And it's becoming clear that they were fired by Pete Hegseth, who is a raging war criminal lunatic. And I can't wait for him to be prosecuted in upcoming war crimes tribunals, by the way. But he fired them clearly because they expressed concern about the Hegseth-Trump plan to invade Iran with U.S. troops. A plan that will be catastrophic in its outcome. That much is clear. Oh, and I should remind you that today I also have an interview with Andrei Martyanov, who was a former, you know, Russian naval officer, but he lives in America. He's been an American for decades, by the way. But his analysis of the war situation is spot on and very frightening if you're an American. Very frightening. Because, look, how to even say this? So Trump chose Hegseth because Hegseth would be loyal to the Zionists. Hegseth has no qualifications whatsoever to be the Secretary of Defense or Secretary of War. Hegseth is a drunk. Hegseth is a moron. He's full of bravado and talking tough, but he has no leadership qualities whatsoever. Hegseth and Trump are about to lead potentially over 10,000 U.S. troops into a death trap set by Iran that has been announced by Iran. Iran officials saying, come on, land your troops. We are ready. We've been waiting for this moment for decades. Land your troops. And it seems that these top army officials, they know this, and they have warned Hegseth. And it's even possible, although this part is just conjecture, we don't know for sure, but it's possible that they refused to follow the order to land the invasion forces because they knew that it would be a massacre of U.S. troops. That's quite possible. And perhaps in the minds of some of these people like Randy George, perhaps they decided they would rather retire, you know, be fired, than to have their name on the deaths of thousands of U.S. soldiers. But that's where this is going. And yes, like I said, it's going to be absolutely catastrophic. And the Pentagon right now is doing everything in their power to cover up the number of fatalities, both killed and wounded. There's no question in my mind that there are over 1,000 U.S. casualties already in this war. We're being told it's, you know, 13 dead and maybe a few hundred wounded. No, it's at least a four-digit number at this point. But, you know, they're going to withhold that from us. Here's the question. Why is Hegseth and Trump, why are they sending U.S. soldiers into an unwinnable situation that every military expert says will be a massacre of U.S. troops? Colonel Douglas McGregor talks about this. Colonel Daniel Davis says the same thing. As I mentioned, Andrei Martyanov, although Martyanov has not served in the U.S. military, but he's an author of numerous amazing books on military strategy, by the way, and he's an expert in all kinds of areas like logistics and theaters of war, etc. And there are many other experts who are sounding off on this and saying, this is a suicide mission. This will not work. It's going to be mass death of U.S. troops. Why are Trump and Hegseth sending them into that? And there are really only two explanations at this point. Either, number one, they are high on their own supply. Like, they're out of their minds insane. Trump thinks he's Jesus. He thinks he's invincible. Hegseth doesn't think at all. He's incompetent. He's Mr. Tough Guy, frat boy, you know, beer drinking, bong smoking, whatever he does. Totally unqualified for this position. Trump has zero diplomacy skills. He brags about war crimes on video, brags about war crimes. We're going to bomb them into the Stone Age, which is by definition a war crime. You know, the U.S. has signed on to the Geneva Convention that prohibits the targeting of civilian infrastructure. But Trump and Hegseth brag about it. They brag about their war crimes. So, again, my point is, it's either that they're so outrageously arrogant and incompetent that they don't have any idea what they're doing, or the other option is they know what they're doing and they want thousands of U.S. troops to be killed because they think, for whatever reason, that that's going to maybe bolster support for a bigger war. In other words, they want Vietnam 2.0 in the Middle East. And I'm leaning towards that direction because it's being reported now in major media that Trump, you know, he's saying, well, we're not going to be able to fund Medicare, Social Security, daycare, whatever. He's throwing all that under the bus. He's going to run in the midterms on expanding the war budget. Yeah, right. I guess because he wants to commit political suicide for the GOP or something. He wants to lose very badly. He wants to lose so badly that the Senate could have a 67-seat Democrat majority, which could convict him if he is impeached in the House. And that might be where this is headed. It's hard to say. I mean, it seems unlikely that there could be that much turnover in the Senate because not everybody's up for election in the Senate, obviously. But it's possible. It's possible. It's also possible that some GOP senators could switch parties, like Murkowski, huh? Yeah? And perhaps some others. So things could change quite dramatically, but Trump is going to run as the war president at a time when the American people are paying the price for his war in terms of food inflation and fuel inflation and collapsed supply chains. And internationally, by the way, the ditching of the dollar by every country that can on the planet. I mean, the petrodollar is done. This is a bad situation. Trump's going to run on war when the American people, now the vast majority, oppose this war. They want peace. They want prosperity. They want cheap fuel, you know? They want electricity prices to be affordable. They want their jobs back. They want to be able to afford to pay rent, buy food, and purchase health insurance, or car insurance for that matter. That's what the American people want. Trump is saying to the American people, big F you, I'm going to fund war. You know, while America's airports are crumbling and the roads are crumbling and the bridges are falling down, the infrastructure is a mess, the education system is a total failure, at least the public system, across the board, Trump is saying, no, we need to spend money for Israel and bleed and die for the Zionists. That's what Trump is doing. And he's doubling down and tripling down on it. Because at this point, it's clear Trump has lost his damn mind. 25th Amendment time. He needs to be removed from power. He needs to be impeached. He's got to be pulled from that position because he is destroying the United States of America. He's destroying our military. He's going to get thousands of our best troops killed. He's destroying our reputation. That's already done. He's destroying our currency. He's destroying our economy. He's destroying our industry. Trump is basically an arsonist, and he's been pouring gasoline all over the United States of America, and he just lit the match and threw the match down and said, screw you, I work for Netanyahu. That's what Trump just did. He's setting America on fire because he doesn't care about anybody else but himself. That's apparent. He only cares about himself, and he's not up for re-election. So what does he care if he burns down the GOP and burns down America's economy? He's not up for re-election. It's unbelievable. We are headed into the darkest time in the history of this constitutional republic. Trump is putting us on a path of total destruction of the American empire, the currency, the economy, the supply chains, industry, again, everything. Everything that matters in our country, Trump is burning it down, seemingly deliberately, while a few remaining MAGA-tards cheer his every move because they have no brain cells functioning. So this is bad, and it's going to get even worse. It's almost certain that the invasion, the land invasion, will happen by the time, or shortly after the time you hear this. You know, let's say Friday night or early Saturday morning, USA time. Trump typically likes to wait for the markets to close on Friday, and then he'll run an invasion. And I don't know, is today a day when the markets are closed anyway? I don't know. Someone was talking about Easter, but I thought it's way too early for Easter. So whenever the markets close, that's when Trump will probably launch this invasion. And once that happens, oh my God, oil will skyrocket. Gold will skyrocket, probably. Supply chains will crater. The world will be in a far worse situation with a far worse outcome. Iran will go all out destroying targets, probably in Qatar and the UAE, etc., as well as continued bombing of Israel. And the United States of America will begin to take casualties by the thousands. U.S. soldiers will die by the thousands. And, you know, Lindsey Graham will then go on Fox News. We thank them for their sacrifice. They died for their country. No, they didn't. They died for your Zionist masters in Israel. They bled for Israel in a satanic, ritualistic, engineered war that was engineered by the demons that are running Israel and controlling Trump. They are Satanists, full-blown Satanists. Yeah, they need blood. Maybe that's what this is. This is a giant, satanic blood ritual that Trump is ordering for that purpose, because Trump is functioning as the Antichrist president as well. And it's just abundantly clear at this point. It's so obvious. And all the so-called Christian pastors who support Trump at this point, they are all demons. They are all Satanists pretending to be Christians. Every last one of them. Especially that crazy woman. What's her name? Crazy psycho, you know, con artist Christian woman. Yeah. Who's in the White House saying that Trump is Jesus and all this unbelievable nonsense. Like, our country has slipped into a religious fanaticism con game. It's a con. It's like, what was that movie that Steve Martin was in way back in the 70s or 80s where he was playing the role of like a con artist, you know, evangelical con artist guy? That's who's running the White House now. It's unbelievable. And we're in for a world of hurt. In fact, I've got a separate report about the economic consequences, and I'll cover that in more detail there. But, oh, I forgot to mention also, Pam Bondi has been fired as Attorney General. She's out. Or she's forced to resign. Same thing. On top of that, it looks like Kash Patel may be next to be fired. There's rumors of that, not yet confirmed. There's other people in the Trump White House being fired, and it looks like they're all being replaced with hardcore Zionist rabbis or people with ties to Zionism. So this is not Trump cleaning house to exorcise the demons out of the White House. This is Trump doubling down to bring in the worst kind of demons to plunge our country into a bloodlust war of ritualistic, satanic sacrifice of young American boys and women in the military to have them bleed and die for the Satanists in Israel. Trump is literally carrying out a demonic ritual and spilling the blood of our young men and women for the Satanists in Israel. That's what's going on. This should be alarming to anybody who cares about anything. I mean, yes, this should be very alarming. So I'll do my best to try to keep you posted on this, but it's going to be a wild, wild weekend. And I'm sorry to say, I'm really sorry to have to bring you this news, but this is what's happening. And there's nothing that you and I can do to stop it, apparently. Nothing. Trump is on a track set by Satan, and he's going to follow his Satanist masters until America is destroyed and the world is burning. That's the track that Trump is on. And since there's no one with a spine in Congress to remove him from power, there's nothing that can stop it. So this is the end of the American empire. Trump is burning it down from top to bottom. There will be nothing left of the world that you once knew when Trump is done. Keep that in mind. All right, I'll try to keep you posted. Like I said, catch my other analysis videos and podcasts at brightvideos.com, and you can find my articles at naturalnews.com. Thank you for listening. Pray for America. Take care. You know, this war in the Middle East may be the perfect spark for cold fusion. Low energy nuclear reactions, as they're called, LENNR. And remember, first demonstrated in 1989, Fleischmann and Pons, University of Utah, Salt Lake City, I believe. And it has been mocked ever since as fraudulent, but it's not fraudulent. It's just not well understood. And there are hundreds of labs that have replicated cold fusion experiments all over the world, including the United States Navy, by the way. And there is at least one company in the United States that is commercializing cold fusion technology and has signed, as my understanding, I've been told they've signed a licensing deal with a major industrial manufacturer outside the United States. I don't want to say which country, but it's a country that manufactures a lot of, let's say, boilers and heating devices. And remember that cold fusion works slowly. It works by heating water. So it generates excess heat by converting mass of, I believe it converts heavy water mass into heat energy. And then it leaves behind the telltale signs that a nuclear fusion event took place, such as helium, for example. Now, I'm not an expert on cold fusion. I've covered it here and there over the years. I've interviewed some people on it. But I do know that it works. And I do know that it's incredibly effective at heating water, which means that water can be circulated to heat buildings. But if you can concentrate that heat into a relatively small amount of water, then you can turn water into steam. And steam, as you know, expands. The volumetric expansion is very powerful, and then that expansion can drive steam turbines, which is how nuclear power plants work. The nuclear energy, in that case, fission energy, will heat the water, and then the water turns to steam and drives the turbines. So if you can heat water to boiling point, then wow, you have an amazing energy solution. And one of the interesting things about cold fusion is that it uses some exotic elements such as palladium in a certain matrix. And this is part of what's not well understood, at least in my knowledge, is exactly how it works well. And labs are still trying to figure out how to optimize this, but palladium is part of it. These exotic elements are necessary, but they're not consumed in the process, which is great news because it means, you know, you build it once and then you can use it for decades. You do have to feed it heavy water, but only in very small amounts. Now, remember that when you're talking about mass conversion into energy, it doesn't take much mass to create a lot of energy. And for example, the atomic bomb detonated in World War II over Hiroshima, that entire atomic bomb only converted 0.7 grams of mass. So less than, you know, a dog treat in your palm. Less than that, 0.7 grams of mass was converted into energy, which resulted in roughly around 16 kilotons equivalent of TNT. So think about that. So in order to power your home, a typical home may only use, let's say, 3 kilowatts throughout the day. So I don't know, you want to call it, let's say, 75 kilowatt hours of power. And a lot of homes use less than that. Let's say 50 kilowatt hours, whatever. It doesn't take much mass to do that. We're talking, I don't know, micrograms per day of mass in order to achieve that. And the mass that's available for this is found in all the world's oceans. So you don't have to worry about the Strait of Hormuz if you can just get your fuel from the ocean. You see what I mean? So the reason that this technology has been suppressed all these years is because, of course, the governments of the world have wanted to run the world on an oil economy in order to induce artificial scarcity as a means of control and also a means of suppression. They want to suppress humanity, keep people down, make sure that people don't have strong economic mobility, cut down on people's travel, etc. But also, importantly, to consolidate power in the hands of those who control the oil. That's why there is this war in the Middle East right now. It's about who controls the energy that powers the world, the energy that powers industry, manufacturing, and more recently, AI data centers. Because whoever has the most abundant energy can power the most microchips to build the best AI to more quickly arrive at superintelligence, which would dominate the world, most likely. So energy control has been the goal of the powers that be. And cold fusion was always seen as too decentralized because technically you could build this in your garage. You could run a cold fusion unit. That is, once you know the right recipe, you know, how much palladium, what configuration, how does this go together, etc. Once you know the recipe, this can be replicated quite readily and in a decentralized fashion. All of a sudden, people could live off-grid and you can't monitor them with smart meters. All of a sudden, people could recharge their electric vehicles by, well, effectively having a cold fusion unit in their garage that just generates power 24/7, even at a slow rate, you know, even if it's just putting out 1 kilowatt over time. You know, I mean, in a day, that's 24 kilowatt hours, right? So that becomes substantial. Even small units like that can recharge EVs overnight without having to use grid power and without having to use solar power, etc. So this is why cold fusion has been suppressed this entire time, is engineered energy scarcity. But because of what's happening in the Middle East, and we don't yet know how this is going to ever get resolved, but the way it's going right now, it's going to put Iran in charge of about 20% of the world's energy. That is, if Iran continues to control the Strait of Hormuz, which seems to be the case, at least so far. If that happens, then Europe is in deep trouble. Already we've seen the Chancellor of Germany say that they need to urgently build 12 nuclear power plants, and they're talking about rebuilding the Nord Stream pipeline and buying cheap Russian gas once again. My, how things have changed, right? That's because Germany is collapsing due to a lack of abundant energy. But when you look at European countries, you know, they built solar. Germany built a lot of solar over the years. The problem is Germany is too far from the equator. And so the solar efficiency, you know, year round is not very good. Not in Germany, not in Britain, you know, not in France, etc. That whole region is not really ideal for solar. Too far north. Same thing with Canada. You know, same thing with, let's say, Japan, you know, to a large degree, etc. So the thing about cold fusion is it doesn't require the sun to shine. It doesn't require the wind to blow. And it doesn't require, you know, the right weather or the right latitude or the right season or anything like that. It generates power 24/7 in a controllable, you know, non-exploding, you know, it's not going to go nuclear into a giant atomic bomb mushroom cloud. It doesn't work that way. We're talking about slow fusion. In fact, slow fusion might be a better name for it than cold fusion. That's why it's called low energy nuclear reactions. It's low energy. It's barely happening. Otherwise, you know, it would boil off all the water. It's just heating the water. And this is incredibly useful for our world right now in the context of this new war in the Middle East, in the context of natural gas being offline and oil being offline, etc. Now, cold fusion doesn't replace hydrocarbons that are needed for ammonia production, for, you know, example, urea and nitrogenous fertilizers. So you still need hydrocarbons for a number of reasons. But in terms of just heat and raw power, cold fusion can be made incredibly viable, incredibly practical, and incredibly affordable. And all of that, yeah, is, I think, going to be accelerated by this war in the Middle East. Now, one of the things that has held back cold fusion is that many of the companies involved in it, or almost everyone, they've tried to patent it because they saw it as the single most important technology for world abundance, and they saw that the tech was worth effectively trillions of dollars in, you know, revenues over time. And given that cold fusion has some substantial R&D costs up front for experiments and optimization, deployment, manufacturing, etc., and also, you know, acquisition of palladium, things like that, they wanted to have a return on investment, which is, that's understandable. That's not unreasonable. If you tell investors, hey, I need you to put $500 million into this project, then you need patent protection typically in order to be able to, you know, pay off the investors. But as a result, many of the patents got confiscated by the United States government, because what happens with any kind of so-called free energy device is the patent office will send it over to the U.S. government, and the government will say, oh, well, we're going to take the patent now. We're going to classify it as top secret, and therefore, you cannot have this patent. So over the decades, the U.S. government has just stolen many patents just to bury them, you know, to maintain the oil economy and the engineered energy scarcity that the government uses to control people. So the only way I believe for cold fusion to really take off is for somebody to invent a practical decentralized construction method and then to just open source it. Just open source it. Like, I've open sourced a lot of stuff. I believe in open source. I mean, my book site, you know, the AI book creation engine that I built called brightlearn.ai, we're approaching 50,000 books, and every one of those books is open sourced. So you can download them for free. And we have audiobooks coming online. Now, thousands of audiobooks are already, or maybe not thousands, but approaching 1,000 are already done. And you can download those audiobooks completely free. Just the MP3 files. I've also open sourced an AI language model that many people have downloaded and used. And I believe in open source. I believe that open source is the only way that we're going to get to anything resembling free energy. Because anybody that tries to patent any of these devices, those patents are going to get confiscated. Open source bypasses centralized control. And it allows independent inventors and small teams to still get credit for it in the sense of, you know, having your name on it or being cited or you know, maybe being well known in the press or something. But you're not going to earn royalties on the tech because everybody will be able to make it themselves. That's the only way that we as a species are going to succeed in bypassing the central systems of control. Because they control all the doors. They're the gatekeepers. They decide what technology is allowed to go out and what they're going to confiscate. And the only way to bypass that is to make sure they don't even know about it. So if anybody's out there listening and you want to change the world for the better, then you know, create a cold fusion how-to guide, like a DIY cold fusion in your garage, and just release it for free. Let everybody build it and use it. That's the only way this is ever going to happen. And as you're doing this, don't talk about it because they'll come kill you, by the way. Yes, that's exactly what will happen. So don't talk about it until it's done. Just release it, like put it on GitHub, you know, put up a GitHub repo, put it on the BitTorrent sites, post it to all the video sites, like spread the word everywhere. I mean, I can help people do that. I know how to do that, but I don't have time to work on cold fusion technology myself. And I'm not even pretending that it's super simple. It's probably going to take somebody, you know, a real concerted effort to simplify this and make it practical. So until that happens, we're going to live under energy scarcity is my guess. And I understand people can do solar farms and they can do, I don't know, like Stirling engines with heat, you know, like focus solar energy into like ceramic blocks and things like that and convert that to kilowatt hours using Stirling engines or whatever. There's a number of different ways. You know, you could do like parabolic mirrors focused on like pipes with water and turn them into steam and have steam drive turbines and things like that. There's a number of different systems out there. You know, wind also on top of that. And that's all great. But none of that stuff is very reliable because the sun doesn't shine all the time. And the thing about solar energy is, you know, you're only getting it when the sun is shining. And then what do you do for the rest of the darkness? Well, then you have to have batteries. And now things get very expensive and very complicated. Now you're talking about how many charge discharge cycles. And then you have to have, you know, inverters and controllers and all this kind of stuff. With cold fusion devices, you don't need batteries because the battery is the mass. The battery is the heavy water, in essence, and you can convert the heavy water into kilowatts through the process of cold fusion and steam turbines, etc., which can all be miniaturized, you know? This doesn't have to be a big thing. It can be a small thing. It can be about the size of an outdoor, you know, air conditioning unit right now attached to a typical home. So, like, the size of, you know, an automatic dishwasher appliance or something like that. Something that size with cold fusion could probably generate, you know, I don't know, 1 to 3 kilowatts 24/7 is my point. But somebody needs to engineer that. And maybe this war will be the thing that sparks that level of innovation. So if anybody's listening and you're going to do this or you're interested in doing it, I'm interested in helping you publicize it when that day comes, if that day comes. I would love to help you publicize it. I would love to. I mean, again, I don't have time to do this myself. I'm busy with a bunch of AI projects. But if somebody out there wants to do it, I would love to help you publicize it. I would love to help you like quality control it, try to build a unit, etc., and get the word out for humanity. If we can decentralize power in this fashion, it changes everything for the better. It ends the corrupt energy regimes. You know, we're living under effectively energy regimes, energy strangulation. And why? Why? The laws of physics tell us that we don't need to live as slaves under an energy. Actually, it's the energy Epstein regime, if you think about it, right? Yeah, they constrict energy, you know, and they rape children. So neither one of those is good. So maybe we could make all that obsolete with decentralized, so-called free energy that's actually consistent with the laws of physics. That's my goal. So stay tuned. I will keep you posted if I hear anything about any of this or other forms of renewable energy that might be just more readily accessible, such as steam turbines or things like that. I guess we'll find out. You can follow me at brightvideos.com, and you can see my articles at naturalnews.com. And if you want to use my AI tools, I've got our book engine at brightlearn.ai, and it's free, and you can download the nearly 50,000 books. And then I've also got brightanswers.ai, which is our AI research engine. And it's people rave about how great it is. Comprehensive research, full citations, near zero hallucinations. So check that out, brightanswers.ai. I'm Mike Adams. Thank you for listening. Take care.
If they think that they can operate against the country with the, which is 1.6 million square kilometers and has a population of 93 million and already has their reservists, more than 1 million reservists, and there are another 5 million volunteers who want to join. So good luck with that. There are many people who believe that. They watched too many Hollywood movies, especially a movie Patton, you know, and Top Gun Maverick. So they have this graduate degrees in this respect. So, but no, I mean, you have to be a complete imbecile to even conceive that thing. So it could be a catastrophe, essentially.
All right. Welcome, everyone, to this urgent interview here on brightvideos.com. And I'm joined today by author and analyst and just an all-around very insightful, high IQ, amazing individual, Mr. Andrei Martyanov, who I've interviewed before, but it's been a while, and so he's back on the show today. Welcome, Mr. Martyanov. It's great to have you on today.
My pleasure.
Or is it Martyanov? Is that the correct way?
Martyanov is fine.
Oh, okay. All right. I'm always trying to get it correct. But here we are. Trump just gave a speech. I mean, every time he opens his mouth, it's another contradiction. It appears that troops are still beginning to amass for a land invasion and maybe some kind of a rescue mission of claiming to rescue uranium. Now, you are, you know, a naval officer formerly. You understand a lot about the military. You've written numerous books that I've cited many times. So give us your best assessment of the military reality that Trump and the Pentagon are facing.
Well, it's a very bad reality for them. And one of this, the reasons for that first, the United States doesn't have resources nor required force to do anything of value, so to speak, the way the administration, which is not in its own mind, defines it. So they're looking for some kind of objectives for the PR reasons, because obviously it's all tied to the Epstein files and the midterms, which GOP is going to lose with the catastrophic results. So they will try to put what they call boots on the ground, but for the most part, it's going to be the attempts at the special, you know, forces operations, rangers, all kinds of things of this nature, and not going to involve, if they're going to use that, any kind of the serious, real combined arms warfare. But even the force which they have, which is okay, two Marine expeditionary units. You will have the essentially two reinforced battalions That's what it comes down to of those two Marine Expeditionary Units. You'll have the elements of the 82nd Airborne, maybe give and take some other few thousand, give and take. So if they think that they can operate against the country with the, which is 1.6 million square kilometers and has a population of 93 million and already has their reservists, more than 1 million reservists, under the, apart from the regular forces, under the basically in arms. And there are another 5 million volunteers who want to join. So good luck with that. So, and it's especially considering the fact that there's not a single field manual or Army or Marine Corps doctrinal publication which involves description of the of what is going to happen to your force when you begin to assemble. And because unlike mighty missile and air forces of Taliban, this is the real deal, and your assembly areas will be immediately under the fire impact, and it's not going to be RPG. These are going to be drones and all kinds of the nasty missiles, which can carry anywhere between 100 to 500 kilograms of high explosives. So, and Iran does have good recon and targeting on that. So it could be a catastrophe, essentially. It already is. But for now, when, you know, considering the state of the American society, which cannot take casualties, that is why there is always spin to insulate Americans from the actually seeing what is going on. This time, it's going to be impossible.
Yeah, and it's clear that the actual casualty numbers are being hidden from the American people. But I think it's the Washington Post that reported. Of course, they're just, you know, propaganda mouthpiece. But I think they're reporting on this bizarre plan that I don't know if Trump is serious about this, but it involves 82nd Airborne and other troops being dropped in deep into Iran, and then building an airfield while under enemy fire to fly in heavy equipment to burrow into this mountain to rescue the uranium, enriched uranium. This sounds like a comic book fantasy land to me.
I won't pass this by Pentagon. There are many people who believe that. They watched too many Hollywood movies, especially movie Patton, you know, and Top Gun Maverick. So they have this graduate degrees in this respect. So, but no, I mean, you have to be a complete imbecile to even conceive that thing. And I'm not going to go into this market garden thing and what have you. Again, they don't understand they're going to be facing, unlike it was the case with the Saddam's semi-literate retarded army, they will be facing actual armed forces, which can fight the have heavy equipment, they will have a good recon, and they have firepower. And the worst part, which is the obviously pivot of any field manual in the U.S. Inventory, is long-range fires, that United States can bring long-range fires. Well, I have news for them. Iran can also bring long-range fires, and they outrange anything in the U.S. arsenal. So even coming up with this plan, it's a war crime. It is a war crime not only against Iran. It's a war crime against own personnel, putting them essentially as the cannon fodder, which will be, I mean, disassembled. I mean, I cannot even conceive who would even come up with this. But again, don't put it past the Pentagon and people who advise Trump.
Is it possible that this is a deliberate plan to cause massive casualties among U.S. forces? Because the U.S. knows that historically that causes the supporters of the war to become more fervent supporters. At that point, they feel like, well, we have to win now. We will fully support expansion. Is that a possibility?
Well, obviously, it's a possibility. The problem is how probable it is. But yeah, the United States society, well, it's actually not true what they preach here, because if you take a look at the Vietnam War, and these were much tougher people than they are today, okay? And so, it didn't look like the United States and American society was supporting that war much, and especially once the coffins will start going back. The United States doesn't know what real casualties are. Many people still do not understand. And this is another, you know, mythology, and this is what they teach in the U.S. military academies. But essentially, the bulk of the fighting in Vietnam was done not by the U.S. U.S. was bombing, make no mistake, and they certainly had those, you know, combat patrols and all that. But reality, the bulk of the fighting was done by the ARVM, Republic of Vietnam Army, which lost over 10 years more than 350,000 KIAs, and altogether the casualties amounted to almost 1.4 million. American society is not capable to take it. Simple as that.
Yes. Now, what do you suppose Trump's going to actually do here? Because he said in his speech, he said, we're going to bomb Iran into the Stone Age, which is a war crime, obviously, just claiming that. But then he said, we're going to wind this down, or I'm sorry, he implied we're going to wind it down, but he didn't say anything about controlling the Strait of Hormuz. Or, and in previous quotes, he just said, well, that's Europe's problem. They should open the Strait of Hormuz. If he doesn't control the Strait of Hormuz, then hasn't he effectively handed over control of the world's energy supply to Iran?
Yeah, Iran already controls the Strait of Hormuz. Iran already issued demands, and it's already actually been in place. Iran said that, yeah, we're going to talk with Oman only if Oman wants to share with the benefits of having the toll booth, which Iran already installed. And now we know that the payments are done. They are done in yuan, and they're done per equivalent of the $1 per the barrel of the oil transported. The only countries which have free passage there are Russia, China, and the rest of it, I don't know. Who else?
Well, I think there was a deal with Malaysia.
Yeah, probably. There are all countries from the Southeast Asia. Yes, they're definitely more than just China and Russia.
Right. So then effectively, if this is the state in which Trump leaves the Middle East, basically Trump showed up, wrecked the global economy, made Iran more powerful, blamed everybody else, and then left.
I mean, the United States is evicted. It has been evicted from the Gulf. It's probably going to relocate whatever the assets it has to Israel. Granted, Israel survives as the viable state in the nearest future. And that's it. And it doesn't matter where they relocate. I mean, there is no problem for Iranian missile forces to target just about anything in the region.
Yes. So then, doesn't that mean that Iran would clearly leverage its control over the strait against the other Arab nations to absolutely force them to completely permanently evict any U.S. forces from, you know, from restoring and rebuilding those military bases in the region?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I made a video a few days back. I call it Root Causes. It's a repetition, but in a different region, on smaller scale, but still geopolitically very, very significant, is what Russians do. When you listen to Putin, Lavrov, all people, you know, top Russian Russian political top, they repeat this ad nauseam, root causes. We either address them or we will continue to do what we're doing, killing their whatever the remaining cannon fodder they have in Ukraine and those so-called volunteers. This is exactly Iran's position now. If you read attentively, there are 5 points. They are addressing root causes. And if Gulfi monarchies do not want to evict United States bases, those bases will be obliterated, and Gulfis, well, yeah, they will cease to exist as they exist now. They already did, you know, cease to exist as they existed before. So, yeah, it's a root causes. You either address it or not. The war continues. Iran is already strategically won. It's just a matter of how this will be now rearranged in terms of the military political outcomes.
Yeah, thank you for that explanation. And I'm thinking in particular of Qatar, because Iran could simply say to Qatar, look, your entire economy, your entire kingdom, your power depends on your ability to export LNG. And we will simply block all exports from here forward if you continue to work with the West. Couldn't they say that?
They probably already did. And again, the response also was that you take out our oil and extraction facilities and Iran will take out everything in the Gulf. And Iran certainly can do that. They already started doing this. And so if we look attentively at the dynamics of the, not futures really, the actual gas, actual LNG, it's from what I heard. I didn't, don't quote me on that. I'm taking it from the top of my head. But it grew up like 300% already. So Europe is down because they completely depend on that. They cannot buy anything from Russia. Russians decline. They don't sell them anything to Europe. So there you go. We have the geopolitical shockwave of unprecedented scale. You know, so the last 5 years is just absolute mayhem.
I'm so glad you brought that up about Europe, because I read recently that Germany's Chancellor Merz is now essentially begging Russia to sell them Russian gas, and even claiming that he will, or his country will pay for the repairs of Nord Stream, which the United States Navy destroyed in another act of terrorism. But Germany is also simultaneously still funding Ukraine's military effort. Why would Russia sell gas to Germany at all?
No. Germany has to die out as it exists. It's their problems, okay? If they don't have, well, the society has been completely emasculated, and it is brainwashed. And so if they continue to elect this type of people, let them basically rot. It's not Russia's responsibility. And yes, Russians will never forgive Germany anymore. They blew it big time. There was a sort of reconciliation after the World War II, granted on the very, so to speak, German, you know, calculating grounds that they needed the energy, you know, the Ostpolitik and all. Now, no, there is no forgiving of Germans. Russians will not forget the Leopard being burned by Russians in Kursk Oblast. So they betrayed Russia. And so there you go. You know, so pardon me, I need to stop this calling. What can I say?
So I thought that perhaps Russia would be willing to sell gas to Germany with a Nazi tax of, let's say, 5 euros per cubic meter of gas. You know, just make it ridiculously expensive and say, do you want it or not?
I mean, Russia already stated that she already does. She already sells all energy at the premium. You have to understand that it's at the premium. So there's no going back to all those, you know, things which were happening before. And it actually also goes towards India, which before that was, pretty much not exploiting. It was mutual, you know, but they were buying this on the discount price of the, for example, Urals. Now Urals is trading at, even on futures, in reality, it's even higher. On futures, about $109, $108 per barrel. It's about 85% growth. And even India will be buying it for premium. For Germany and others, Rudenko, first deputy foreign minister of Russia, 2 days ago stated, it's official statement by foreign ministry, that the countries which have been, basically imposed the cap on Russian energy, they're not getting any. Russia is not selling them anything. And now with the Russia stopping the export of the gasoline, there you go. So Europe, let Europe enjoy.
Right. So, okay, kind of a personal question to you, because one of the things that you and I share is that we are bewildered at the stupidity of Western civilization. Just it's like a suicide cult stabbing themselves in the neck repeatedly and claiming its victory. How do you try to make sense of what's happened? Because you live in America, you will be impacted by all of this in terms of food prices and supply chain fracturing. How do you try to, what do you say to yourself when you look at the world and like, has everybody gone insane?
Well, I mean, I made the sense a long time ago. It's just a matter of, you know, adding to the sense some juicy details, if you wish. But they do not change the basically main thrust of my books and writing. For we're having 57 million Christian Zionists in United States. They're not Christian. It has nothing to do with Christianity. It's a heresy, and they're fanatics. You know, so
clearly,
so
then, clearly.
Sorry?
Clearly they are fanatics.
They are fanatics, yes. And so they're not Christians. Anybody who thinks that they're Christians have a bridge to sell them, cash only. And so these are the people who are the main thrust, basically, of the Israeli first agenda for basically Washington, D.C. Washington, D.C. doesn't have U.S. Congress. United States doesn't have U.S. Congress. It has Knesset 2.0. Trump is utterly controlled by the Bibi Netanyahu and Mossad. And so that's what Washington, D.C. is. And so United States, I am repeating this for a number of years now, is not a sovereign country. It is controlled by Israel, and it has to be sacrificed by Israel. And so these people who represent also the base for the GOP and senators like Lindsey Graham and all other fanatics there, they are there in driving seat. They first keep in mind, we like normal folk, you know, even atheists or Catholics or what have you, we're not even considered Christians by their, you know, definitions, because it's Scofield Bible brainwashed people. So, and that's who they are. And we know what happened with Charlie Kirk. They control media. They control our political process, and United States is now a victim, people of United States. And yeah, that's what it is. And it's as sad as it is, but you are correct. The West is done. West in Europe is done for the number of other reasons. But again, they always try to basically legitimize pedophilia. There are all kinds of the satanic things. There is another pedophile in BBC just 2 days ago. It looks like...
really?
Absolutely. They need to call it, you know, PBC, you know, Pedophile British Corporation. You know, that's what they are.
Right.
And so we have this situation. It's a complete decomposition of the culture. Uglification. The Western woman has been in slutified. So because it's really interesting to be a whore, you know, OnlyFans prostitute or things like that. It's a result of the third wave feminism. So we have the ugliness which descended upon us. And one of the basically manifestation of this ugliness, we can see now what Trump is trying to do to the White House with his ballroom, which is conceived by, I don't know how to even describe it, an elegant and beautiful building of the, you know, White House for U.S. residents of U.S. presidents is now going to be uglified. Did you see his golden things inside the White House?
Yeah, modeled after Kim Jong-un.
It's just gypsy level. So there you go. And remember, listen, H.L. Mencken, exactly 100 years ago, he stated it beautifully. He said that the more we, actually, as our democracy is being perfected, at some point of time, the you know, deepest desires, hard desires of our people will, you know, will happen. And the White House will be adorned by the downright moron. This is H.L. Mencken.
So let's back up to, I mean, I'm really glad you brought that up, because I agree with you that the Western civilization is in a state of accelerating collapse, and it appears to be irreversible, because for so many reasons, but lack of intelligence would just be one of them. But let's go back to 1991 and the breakup of the Soviet Union, which was cheered, of course, by the West. And then at that time, the Western leaders thought that they would dominate the world for 1,000 years and that they could do anything they wanted. With the currency, with their military, with power projection from U.S. aircraft carriers, which have now proven to be utterly useless. But that dominating attitude continued until now. And hasn't Iran been, well, I guess, you know, Russia also in terms of NATO empowering Ukraine to fight Russia, you know, Russia stood up against NATO, but Iran has standed up directly against the full force of the United States military. Is this a pivot point for the downfall of the American empire?
Yeah, it's been around. Listen, if you go to my blog and go to the January 7th, 2015 post in my blog, one of the first posts in my blog.
Give us your, is that your Substack?
No, it's my blogspot.com.
Oh, okay. Give us the address of that, please.
Yeah, it's smoothiex12 .blogspot.com.
Got it.
And you read this. I write about it that even by initiating the coup d'etat in Ukraine, West and the United States sustained defeat. They just they don't know it yet because they absolutely have no qualified people who know anything about Russia, Russian culture, Russian people, and of course, military history. And generally speaking about military science, United States militarily is not their top league, despite the statements by people like Obama. You remember, finest fighting force in history. I'm pretty sure Mr. Zhukov and Mr. Manstein were spinning in their graves.
And Pete Hegseth drives that point home he's a drunk frat boy.
Yeah, obviously, and people of the like Alexander the Great and, you know, Napoleon probably was insulted too, you know. So, and Kutuzov was absolutely terrified. He also was spinning in his grave. But then again, you know, you cannot teach real military history in U.S. military academies. That's simply not allowed. So, and as a result, we have what we have today, and it's going to get worse. And at this stage, depending on what Trump will try to do, because it's not normal, it's not driven by the rational, scientific, or any other, you know, moral point. As you correctly stated, he is now proclaiming the war crimes being the new norm. United States itself is under the danger of decomposition, essentially, granted that U.S. society already is dramatically split, and we have two extremes, you know, and so-called left, which is not left, that's a neoliberal, fanatical, woke, whatever the strata of American society. On the other side, you have, yeah, that's what we spoke about, the basically so-called conservatives, which are neoconservatives. They are also neoliberal, but they are also fanatical Israeli forces. So there you go. That's the conundrum for the American society.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm also struck by the fact that the U.S. hasn't actually been in any kind of ground combat with parity forces for I don't know how long it's been, a very long time.
Since Korea.
Okay. So, you know, there is overconfidence. There's incompetence, clearly, at the highest levels of the Pentagon. But there's also, you know, there's a weakness in the U.S. soldier mentality today. And I know a lot of soldiers. I've trained with special forces privately in firearms and everything. But all the strong guys that I know, they retired long ago, and what's left behind is not the same as what it used to be. Do you think that if our ground forces and special forces, the 82nd Airborne and so on, if they actually get inserted into Iran, are they in for a wake-up call, or are they going to prove to be supermen?
Yeah. Yeah, there are no supermans. You have to understand one thing, which I repeat ad nauseam for many years. There is not a single serviceman in the United States military or special or whatever CIA paramilitaries. None doesn't exist. None of them exist, from simple Grant to the general, whoever fought in defense of their own country, motherland. They never fought for their family. They never fought for their property, for their culture, for their freedom. None do not exist. And none of them know what real war is. When your family is blown to smithereens, your wife is raped, your children are killed or tortured in front of you especially. So United States doesn't know war, like real war, continental war. And there is not a single person in the U.S. military who have enough developed this organ, intellectual, moral, spiritual organ, which our consciousness, who can actually relate to any. They can do the lip service to it, and they say, oh, yeah, we understand. Well, understanding is not enough. You have to actually be guided by it. And United States has no disguidance whatsoever.
I think that's accurate, because we're always fighting wars over there somewhere else. It's never our own.
It's expeditionary force. Always was. Always will remain. And you cannot change cultural DNA. Geography here also takes the precedent, because United States is a very secure society in terms of, at least until the development of the intercontinental ballistic missiles. It was always secure society by sitting behind the oceans and pontificating on the matters of war and peace while having reality zero experience with it. And so, well, I'm obviously a little bit tired about listening or hearing about American Civil War. As brutal as it was not even in the same league, for example, as the Russian Civil War, 1918-1922, which had, well, more than 12 million casualties. So, yeah, I mean, it's just like you scales, they don't comprehend. And the same is like, give me some moron like Kellogg, you know, or General Keane, or explain to him, just literally grab him by the, you know, his collar and bring him onto the line of combat contact in Ukraine or whatever is remaining it, and explain to him and show him how the American generals who were in charge of the developing of the operations in Ukraine killed almost 2.5 million Ukrainian soldiers. Killed. We're not talking about wounded, which actually multiplied easily by 1.5. So they did about 7 million casualties for Ukrainian, which is even the propaganda pieces like Washington Post and New York Times cannot, even Time Magazine, even BBC, they go out and say, there is a demographic catastrophe. They killed the nation. These people don't have any consciousness. They don't understand what they're doing. And militarily, they're incompetent. If you look intensively at this Wiesbaden group, which planned this famous counteroffensive, and these are Mr. Aguta, these are Mr. Donahue, who today is actually is the supreme commander of the American forces in Europe. This was Mr. Cavoli. These people have no clue about operational planning. What did they do? They killed 200,000 of the Ukrainian troops, and they didn't even reach Russia's first line of defense. How can you explain? This is the level, okay? This is what they teach them. Teach being, of course, a very kind of loose term in the military academies in the United States.
Yeah, well, clearly the way the U.S. Conducts war is obsolete. But today it's worse than that. It's just stupid. There's, for example, this troop buildup in the Middle East, there's no logistics planning behind it. It's just Trump just announces we're going to invade. And I imagine all his military commanders are like, what? We need a year to build up the forward operating bases and so on. But that's not even my question, though. I want to ask you, Andre, what about Russia's role in this? Because there was a report just the other day of Russian submarines, perhaps in the Arabian Sea, and Russia has, you know, very advanced submarine technology, as you know. But, you know, if Iran were to fall to the West, that would be a very dire cost, I think, to, you know, Russia and China both in terms of trade and geography and so on. What is Russia doing now, or maybe willing to do, in your view, to support Iran?
Well, I mean, you have to understand that what I'm about to say, some of it is absolutely verified. The other part, you know, I'm just going to say things which could be speculation, but probably not. Okay. Well, in terms of Russian nuclear power submarines, in terms of the multi-purpose submarines, they are in Indian Ocean constant on patrols. There is some unit which isn't there. So there's nothing new. They conduct the observation and recon missions there, apart from carrying, obviously, very powerful, you know, missile, basically.
Yes. Battery.
So that's normal. If we start talking about it, for some reason, Iran is really precise in its strikes, right? Who knows? There is only other recon and intelligence operation which is measuring up, albeit smaller than that of the United States, and that's Russians. They have a very advanced system of the recon and targeting and processing power. So China also provides some support, but I mean, so, you know, make your own conclusions, okay? For some reason, Iranians are extremely accurate, you know?
What about missile technology, has there been in any transfer or any knowledge gained by Iran from Russia, or is that
No. It's mostly North Korean.
Oh, okay.
So there is a North Korean thing, but again, it's even North Korea today has a more advanced missile technology than it was provided for Iran. Albeit Iranians, they have their own engineers. It's older technologies, but they're still good enough to inflict horrendous damage, and they just basically penetrate U.S. and Israeli air defense essentially at will. So that's good enough, and obviously Iranians also kind of developed their own, so to speak, tricks for that technology. No, yes. Russia didn't transfer anything in terms of missilery of this nature. What Russia officially known, Russians transferred, there is at least four Su-35s in Iran's inventory. There, we can assume that the MiG-29s Bs, which were obsolete by they have been probably upgraded with the Zhuk radar, which allows them to use R-77 air-to-air missile, which has the range of 200 kilometers. It's actually outranges anything in the U.S. inventory, which is the most they have is AIM-120 MRAM. And so that could be the case. We know that Su-35s are there, and we know, but only four. And you have to understand, you have to train personnel on them. You have to shake down this unit of the Su-35s, and takes time. But what we know, Mi-28 also helicopters are there, and they are actually quite effective in the fight against the drones. We just know there are yet another two drones. This one's from Saudi Arabia and UAE have been shut down by Iranians, and they use all kinds of the air defense means and probably helicopters, which are very effective when fighting this type of aircraft.
Mm-hmm. And I would imagine if the U.S. lands forces there, the helicopters would become major players in whatever happens next, I would imagine. Tell me, what do you think happens if Israel takes this nuclear? Because Israel is getting hit very, very, very hard by all reports, and their defenses don't work, obviously. The Iron Dome has become a joke.
Yeah, it is a joke, yeah.
Yeah, just doesn't work. And they've also run out of interceptors that mostly don't work anyway. I've heard people like, you know, Ted Postol saying there's only a 5% interception rate.
Well, Ted Postol is, let's not go there, but no,
okay, yeah. I mean,
it's not 5%. It's probably higher than that, even up to like 30%, maybe in some cases, depending on the type of the target, because you need to also separate it. But even that, you might as well not have it, you know, so it's still catastrophic, you know, so.
Right. I hear you. So what then happens in your view in terms of, you know, retaliations or escalations or involvement of Russia or China or North Korea? If Israel launches nuclear weapons and strikes Iran with nuclear weapons?
Israel will cease to exist, but not because somebody will actually attack it, albeit per UN charter. I believe there is the clause which allows you when something like this. It's almost kind of perverted right to protect, R2P. So Israel will simply cease to exist for, you know, all kinds of other reasons, because it will become completely pariah state. And the same goes for United States. And in this case, United States will be reduced to the regional power with, you know, rusting obsolete forces. And I don't know if anybody will be able to bear this responsibility in moral terms. Not that the Washington, D.C. has any morality in it anymore, but the consequences will be dire. And that will also most likely accelerate the creation of the Eurasian Military Union. We know that, obviously, militarily, Russia and China, they are cooperating very closely. But that will be the immediately creation of the serious Eurasian military union between, obviously, China, Russia, and India, most likely, and a number of other countries being a part of this thing. And it's
what about Turkey?
No, Turk, no. Well, Erdogan there, good Lord. The guy has like, I don't know how many butt cheeks he has. He probably has sit on five chairs simultaneously. So, but no, no, it's...
you think Turkey will stick with the West?
Yeah, they whatever you say, it's... especially after you can see how this Turkoman Prague, this wet dream by... he is a Muslim Brotherhood, okay? Islamic Brotherhood. So he is the part of Ikhwan. He is obviously very shrewd politician, but Turkey is still going to be sticking to the West.
But, okay. But you think India will join with Russia and China?
I'm pretty sure that it will, because the political pressure will be huge. And again, majority of the world still is afraid and don't like nuclear weapons. So essentially, it will be the final resignation of the combined West. NATO is already dead, we know that, but that will be the end of the NATO. Completely the jury. It's the fact of that. And the United States will become the pariah state, too. And so, and then eventually Israel will simply disintegrate, and that's it.
Okay, last question for you, because I know we're running up on time here, and I appreciate your time. What happens next with the Ukraine conflict situation?
Well, I mean, you have to understand that, as the Russians already stated a number of occasions recently, that, oh yeah, this anchorage and the spirit dissipated. There is nothing. The old negotiations are on pause. And so, judging by the map of Ukraine, so you have to understand there are a lot of territories which are now under Russian control, which are not those oblast, you know, which... For oblast, so Russians are very deep in Sumy Oblast, we're very deep in Kharkov, very deep in Dnipropetrovsk. So, and those territories will fall under the operational control, they are already under the operational control. But eventually, yeah, we are observing now the slow breakup of Ukraine, and it's not going to be 20%. And as many people understand that, yeah, once you are, for example, like you deep into the Dnipropetrovsk, okay. What they call the Dnieper Oblast, you're not going to go back after that, you know? Mm-hmm. So, and that's the end of Ukraine, as we know, as per, if you take a look at the videos and what is happening there, it is complete, I mean, slaughterhouse of the Ukrainian forces and those, you know, what so-called volunteers. It's just slaughterhouse. They try to hold on to some kind of strong point or some city or town, but they eventually get cleaned up, mopped up, and they run. And yeah, will Russia end up at the, by the end of this year, at the left bank of Dnieper River? Likely. Yeah, Russians are not in rush. They save their own personnel. They don't do stupid things. They don't do those, large red arrow offensives. They just blow things to smithereens with the personnel of the armed forces of Ukraine in them. Just recently, they again went, tried to do this, what is called mid-storm. They pumped those guys with, methamphetamines. 30, the platoon, they loaded it, one M1 Abrams tank, another Stryker APC, something, vehicles. They go in. The moment they get on the road, they immediately burned and all that. So that they will continue to do this, and the more will die.
What about the southern coastline and Odessa in particular?
I don't know. Okay, I don't know. Once Zaporozhye is taken, we have to wait and see what's going to happen there. So, because you know what? Why would you, for example, why would you basically sacrifice your personnel for something which could be obtained by political means?
Uh-huh.
Some right. Like collapsing the regime in Kyiv, which is essentially, again, Ukraine is the virtual state. It's literally. It lives on the handouts by Europe and United States. Peter.
Yeah, that's clear. But the question is, those handouts probably cannot last forever. And also the fact that the Middle East war right now is devaluing the dollar as a trading currency for energy. So, yes, go ahead.
No, I mean, yeah, Europe will die on the sword. They are stupid, and you have to understand, unlike American people, many of them obviously brainwashed, and so, but I mean, Americans in general are generally very decent folks, you know. I'm not talking about those fanatics from the, you know, Israel firsters. And so, but Europeans, you have to understand what many people still do not understand. This is the continent which in which two world wars originated from.
Mm-hmm.
And Europeans, especially Germans, especially Western Germans, French, they don't like Russians. They hate Russian gods, majority of their societies. They may be against the war in Middle East, but it doesn't mean that they stop hating Russians. You know why? And France was humiliated by Russia dramatically.
Yes,
first in 1812, then Russians triumphantly entered Paris in 1814. Napoleon was beaten by Russians nonstop. Germany, oh my God, Russians entered Berlin three times. Last one, you know, with the defeating the best West could even throw at Soviet Union. It was 1945. And if you take a look, there is not a nation in Europe which hasn't been beaten by Russians, you know, and sometimes at the bloody pulp. And so now, and especially after what happened with Germany supporting all that, there's no going back. Russians hate Europeans now. So, I mean, not all. There are good people in Europe still, you know, make no mistake. But overall, European societies, they hate Russian gods.
Well, the anti-Russian hatred that we were all subjected to as propaganda since 2022 has been off the charts, but it's the same kind of anti-Iranian hatred propaganda.
Yeah, dehumanization. Yeah, yes. Absolutely. You have all those people, all those guys from the CIA or 77th Brigade in UK, and who cannot, you know what, it's both combination of the hatred, which is historical. In case with British, it's historical, goes back to essentially 18th century. But the rest of it, yeah, they just hate Russians. You know, don't forget, Mr. Clapper, remember he said that Russians are genetically are kind of like screwed up. Did you see any protestations from CNN or no? Harvard? Yeah, Russian. I'm Russian. I'm Untermensch. You have to understand it. It goes not only to the European elites or European population. You look attentively at the actually American system of education. Everything they taught about Russia, it's taught on the from the point of view of this inferior, retarded, you know, genetically, you know, damaged people like me, Slavs, dirty Slavs, you know, things of this nature. So this
is bizarre. It's bizarre.
And it is, yeah. And, take any PhD in Russian here, like Michael McFaul. He's a complete imbecile. So, but yeah, he is the guy who believes all this pro-democracy liberal BS. Take Sarah Payne. She teaches in the U.S. Naval War College. Strategy. The woman never commanded a squad in her life and doesn't know what military science is. She talks about Russians. She still believes that Russia lives in 1990s.
No, Andre, I will tell you, as an American, and I know you got to run, but I will tell you that MBAs and PhDs are handed out to complete morons in America.
H.L.
Every
Mencken,
day.
PhD, morons with the PhDs.
Yes, again,
the great,
100%.
Yeah.
I've seen it myself. I've hired people with MBAs that turned out to be absolute morons, and I had to fire them and replace them with, you know, people who are more entrepreneurial. But anyway, you've got to run. Why don't you give us your blog website again one more time, please?
smoothiex12.blogspot.com.
And what's the title of your most recent book or a book that you want to mention?
America's Final War.
Okay, fantastic. Thank you, Andre. It's always an honor speaking with you. Thank you for your analysis. Wishing you well.
You too. Thank you.
All right. Take care.
Yes, the world is getting crazy, but here at the Health Ranger store, we're putting together a survival supply assortment for you. If you go to healthrangerstore.com/survival, you'll see what we put together for you, including iodine and Iosat. That's a specific brand name of potassium iodide that's FDA approved. Or we have the nascent iodine here, which is less expensive in terms of the iodine that you get. These are available in case things go nuclear. It's clear that you will not be able to find any of this for sale anywhere. All the inventories will be wiped out, like what happened after Fukushima in 2011. So if you want to get your hands on some iodine, this is a chance to get it right now. HealthRangerStore.com/survival. In addition, we have many other survival items for you here, including some silver solutions, some spirulina available in bulk and at a discount, and then a large assortment of storable organic food that's laboratory tested, including our Ranger Bucket sets. Here's a 195-day supply. We've got the mini buckets, and we've also got number 10 cans available of freeze-dried fruits and vegetables and other things like miso soup powder. Here's some of the buckets. There's a big variety available. Here are some of the number 10 cans right here. Remember, a lot of people are missing fruit. They don't have enough vitamin C in their storable food. So, you know, getting bananas and pineapples and strawberries, especially, again, certified organic, freeze-dried. That is the highest quality with the highest nutrient preservation that you can get in any kind of a storable food format. All of this is available right now and so much more. Just go to healthrangerstore.com/survival. And because the freeze-dried foods last for so long, you know, even if you don't eat them this year or next year, just keep them on the shelf. They're going to last a very long time with good preservation, a long shelf life, and they will have value no matter what happens in the world. Now, of course, I'm praying for peace. I'm praying for de-escalation. I don't want to see World War III break out, and I certainly don't want it to go nuclear. But we're dealing with insane times and insane leaders and insane situations. Who knows what could happen tomorrow or next week? Disruptions could happen here in the United States. There could be, you know, domestic attacks that disrupt supply chains here in the U.S. So stock up early, stock up now, get your emergency food, emergency medicine, iodine, anything else that you think that you might need. Get it now. And by doing so, by shopping with us, you'll be supporting our platforms and our AI engines that we offer for free. That's funded in part by sales from our store. So shop with us at healthrangerstore.com/survival and help yourself get prepared and also help us bring you more free tools and platforms that can keep you informed no matter what happens in the world. I'm Mike Adams, the Health Ranger. Thank you for your support. God bless you all. Take care.